travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is JMD Mateus. You know him as the writer behind Justice League International and Spider-Man's Kraven the Last Hunt. He is now writing Ben Reilly's Spider-Man. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. DeMatteis. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
It's 100% my pleasure. You are an absolute legend in the comic book industry, and it's fantastic to actually get to meet you in person. Oh, not exactly in person, but virtually in person.
Well, considering the past 2 years, this is as close to in person as we get these days, isn't it?
That is extremely true. It's been a pretty big deal for the virtual world this the pandemic. It got everyone comfortable with Zoom. I never heard of Zoom even before COVID.
Neither had I.
It's going to be, just think about how many years from now we're going to be telling people, remember when before people knew each other on Zoom and we actually saw it in person and we had actual conversations at tables.
That's right.
So you're an absolute legend of comic, as I said. What advice would you give a new writer about how to find voice of characters? Because you've done a spectacular job doing that over
specifically
decades.
Finding characters' voices?
Yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because I've said this many times over the years, but if you're doing the job right, once the story's kind of like a top, you set it spinning, and then it goes off on its own. And it's the same thing with the characters. You have to allow them to come alive. You know, you sit down, you have your notes, you have your conception of what the story is, who the characters are, what you want them to do. But when things are really working, the characters really take on lives of their own, and you have to listen to them. It doesn't matter what your plan is, what you think you want them to do. You have to be able to listen to them and follow them where they want to go. They have to be as real to you as the flesh and blood people you know. And in some cases, they're more real because you know them more intimately than you know the flesh and blood people in your life, you know? So I think to me, that's the key. And I always say, my job is to kind of get a little saw, cut off the top of their heads, get out a flashlight and root around and see what's going on in the darkest corners and the lightest corners of those psyches. And that's what will drive the story. Plot doesn't drive the story. For me, the plot grows around the characters.
Is there ever a concern about losing control of the character? Because once again, as you're writing them and letting them to dictate the story, is there ever concern that the plot will run away from you?
No, because usually when you want it to, it's my experience. You know, here's my other goofy metaphor. You know, the story is a horse, right? Mm. So you're on this horse and you want to go like 6 miles that way, straight ahead. And you start to go and the horse keeps pulling off to the left. And you're like, no, I want to go 6 miles that way. And finally you realize, no, the horse knows better than I do. You kind of surrender and let it gallop off where it wants to go, you know? Now, I'm not saying you don't need your basic skill set. I mean, at the beginning of any career, you know, when I started in comics, which was at DC Comics back in the days of the anthology comics, they used to call them mystery comics because they couldn't call them horror, you know, and you'd work on these little 6 and 8, and maybe if you got a big story, a 10-page story, but that you learned your craft. There were rules, there were regulations, there were certain things you had to do, certain things you couldn't do, and you had to get those basics down. You always need the basics down. But then once you get that down, you have to just, you know, and even within the context of that, you may be in a specific box, but you still want your characters to come alive. You still want your story. If the story is surprising me, I know it'll surprise you.
You know, I love the analogy that you gave about cutting open a character's head. For a moment, I had a picture in my head of the character Siler from the Heroes. That he takes his, I don't know if you've ever seen the show where he takes his finger, cuts off the person's head, then examines the brain. And you kind of see him doing that, like Siler picking up the character's head and examining the brain, seeing how it ticks.
But we always put everything back in and leave them intact when we're done. You
know? That part is true. So one thing, like I said, when certain characters like Spider-Man, who has been written by many people over the years, when you're choosing to write that character and you're like, so you're cutting off their head and seeing how they're ticking for you, do you feel like you need to connect with what other writers were seeing in that brain, or are you seeing how you want to make that character voice through your own ideas and thoughts about that character?
You need both. You need both because you have to be true to the character. To be true to the character, you have to know who their character was before you came along and what they've been through and what created them and what molded them. And then what you want to do is hopefully find something unique that speaks to you personally. You know, because that's the other thing. I think advice I would give is it has to be personal. You know, you have to connect with something that's very deeply personal in yourself to really make a great character and a great story. You know, even something as quote lighthearted as our Justice League International, those characters had to be real within the context of those adventures. In fact, in some ways, I think because of the humor, they were even more real than some of these more dramatic characters. So it has to be real. It has to be personal. You know, I've done autobiographical comics, but I've said I've also put things into Spider-Man comics that are as deeply personal and as revealing as things that I put into autobiographical comics. The readers don't necessarily know that because it's coming through Peter Parker or Harry Osborn or whoever it may be. But it, but you want it to matter that much, and you want to essentially, you know, a writer has to. I always say this, and I mean this metaphorically, boys and girls, don't do this at home with a real knife. You have to take a knife and dig it into your chest and bleed onto the pages, metaphorically.
be careful of the next comic that comes out has is made in blood. The right, blood. I'm just like, right. They were listening to the interview just a little too closely at that moment.
Wasn't there a Kiss comic years ago where they printed it with Kiss blood or something?
I think I do remember there was someone who gave that shot. I think there also was a sneaker that someone used in the shoe, their own blood. I can't remember I think it was like a rapper who made a particular type of shoe. I was like, wow, that's really a little too serious.
Right. I get it with Kiss. It fit their image, you know?
So when you're writing Spider-Man, what was that part of that character that you were able to key on as making it personal to you? Like I said, your run on Spider-Man is so well beloved.
Oh, thank you. Peter is just so multidimensional and so real. And, you know, for all the superheroics and everything else, for all the fact that he's really good at science and blah, 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 that's not what I ever related to. He's a regular guy. He's the everyman, you know? He's the everyman that puts on that mask, who tries his absolute best, fails spectacularly along the way, but will always get up again and try to do the right thing. And I think I relate to that because, you know, like most of us, I am spectacularly flawed, but I am trying my best in my life to live a good and decent and compassionate life. And so is Peter, and I relate to that. And, you know, Peter, it's so interesting because, you know, with Peter, Jewish writers, Catholic writers, whatever your background is, we all seem to relate to him. And certainly I have both a Jewish and a Catholic background, so that I relate to Peter's guilt tremendously. This is a character completely driven by guilt on so many levels, you know, and if he does anything wrong, he's tortured by it. And I relate to that as well, because that's part of my own character, you know, because if we, you know, we try our best to do the right thing, and it's inevitable being human that we're going to screw up. And then some of us like to then go off and torture ourselves for having done that, you know? Yes. So I relate to that. There's so much in Peter that I relate to because he seems so real to me.
You know, I wonder if a fair argument could be made that Spider-Man, or at least Peter Parker, is the most human of the comic book characters.
I think so. I've always said that he is the most three-dimensional. If you're looking at the Marvel Universe and the DC Universe, he's the character that is the most real to me.
Now, you wrote one of the multiple famous storylines from Spider-Man. Like I said, the Kraven's Last Hunt storyline, which was so beloved. I mean, that story, I mean, even in the movies, they once again go back to it and talk about it as being like one of the keys to understand the character, you know, and how strong and tough he is. You think that is why people love him so much? It's just that toughness, the inner, kind of like the inner willpower to overcome anything, no matter how flawed he is as an individual.
Yeah, that's it. I guess the word, when I think of the word tough, I think of something very macho. I don't think of Peter that way, but resilient.
Resilient.
And he has a very fierce will. You know, if he's trying to do the right thing, he will see it through to the end. And it doesn't matter if it's the Juggernaut kicking him from here to the moon and back again. You know, he'll go off, he'll lick his wounds, and he will come back, and he will keep trying to do the right thing. And even if in the end he fails, at least he will have failed trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought, like, if he was a DC character, he would be like Green Lantern. Like, he'd have the ring, you know, because he has that kind of, like, willpower. That
yes, is, he does. He you know, really does. That's a really good point. Yeah, that's true. He'd make a great Green Lantern.
You also wrote The Clone Saga with Ben Reilly, which is based on the comic you're going for. And in the first issue of Ben Reilly Spider-Man, in the what they call the Arachnotes, you wrote that the story is both famous and infamous. Do you think over the years, when people have looked back at The Clone Saga, do you think it's become more embrace than it was when it first came out?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, the joke is it was embraced when it first came out. You know, when the Clone Saga started, it was a huge sales success, especially at a point, you know, very shortly after that, when the business, you know, when that bubble burst, that 90s bubbles burst, and the sales started going down, the Clone Saga was doing very, very well. It's you know, we don't have to get into the whole thing, but the problem, one of the problems was that it dragged on and on and on and on. And then the powers that be at Marvel basically wanted to end it and bury it and bury everything associated with it. But there's a funny thing that happens in not just in comics, but in popular culture in general. People who were 12 years old at that point reading it are grownups now, and they read that and they loved it. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like, oh, that was my Spider-Man. That was my era, they say. And so, and if you've seen in recent years, so many of these characters have come back. So much, you know, Ben Reilly's in the main Spider-Man book, Dr. Kafka's in the main Spider-Man book, you know, all these characters from that era. Kane has been a big player. So there was, there were a lot of serious problems with the Clone Saga, but there was a lot of great stuff in there and a lot of great characters, not the least of which was Ben.
Well, I will say that my era of Spider-Man was the Clone Saga. I started right around Maximum Carnage when that came out, because that storyline just looked amazing to me. I started buying that, and I bought all through the Clone Saga. And I will say that was my era of Spider-Man as well. I mean, I remember, you know, Ben Reilly. I remember those stories so richly, you know. And I thought that you can understand why people have come back to Ben Reilly. There's a character that, once again, is like Peter Parker, but there's this also increased layer. I mean, if it's even possible, increased layers of guilt and trouble of this character who's trying to define of whether or not he's genuine, like who he is in a very real way. Yes. Not just because, I mean, I think we all struggle in some level about who we are, but he's even struggling with, is he really someone who can acknowledge himself as being a person? Because obviously, as a clone. And I think that's, I just mean, it's such a rich character.
Yes, I always say he is Peter and he's not, because aside from the fact that, you know, he's given this information at one point that he's not even who he thinks he is. And I love stories of identity where, you know, where you play with the fact there's who I think I am versus who I really am. And how do I, you know, to find that truth in between. And then he goes off for 5 years under an assumed name because he can't be Peter anymore. And he has a rough time for 5 years. So, you know, when we find him in the Ben Reilly book, he's come back. Peter and Mary Jane have gone off to live there happily ever after. And I'm back in New York, but I can't be Peter Parker. Because everyone who knows Peter Parker thinks he's just moved to Portland with his wife. So now I've got this like fake blonde hair and this fake name and no life, except, you know, the only life he really can relate to at this point is being Spider-Man, because that he knows.
Yeah.
He can put on a costume and do that. But as for who Ben Reilly is, he doesn't know. And one of the main arc of this series that just started in January, I think the second issue comes out next week, is that primal question: who am I, and how am I going to build a life? You know, can I find friends? Do I even deserve to have friends? Because a part of him still feels less than human and unworthy of all the things he's been given. And there's always that little doubt in the back of his head. Well, first I thought I was the clone, then they tell me I'm the real guy. Well, what if that's wrong? And what if, you know? And there's this whole question. You know, with Ben, and at this point in time with Peter too, there's always in the back of both their minds like, what's going on here? What's real and what's not? And they may never know.
You know, I think one testament to how genius you are as a writer is you're able to convey a lot in a very shorthand way. There's a moment at the beginning of Ben Reilly Spider-Man, the first issue, where he bumps into J. Jonah Jameson. And
I really like that scene.
Yeah, and he's angry about being recognized. And I think that anger being recognized, just because it's J. Jonah Jameson who recognizes him, but the anger of that moment of like maybe recognition that people still see him as, you know, as Peter Parker, but he can't be that guy.
Yes, exactly.
It's so rich. And I felt like you said so much about the character in that one moment of scene without even giving that exposition. I always hate exposition. And you have bypassed all that by just giving this one scene and one reaction. It just speaks to everything.
And he says, you know, Jonah's talking to him. He says, I'm not Parker. And the minute he says that, Jonah sees something. I mean, one of the points of that scene was, they are not the same guy because he has been changed by this journey. And when you look into the eyes of this guy who's been on the road for 5 years, getting kicked around by life in a way even Peter hasn't been, and Jonah realizes, oh, sorry, I mean, he gets very flustered and he wants to get out of there really, really quick. You know, yeah, I was very happy with that scene. And David Boldion, our artist, did a beautiful job bringing that to life.
So when you approach writing Ben Reilly, once again, you're writing a character who is Peter Parker, but not Peter Parker. Where is the line that you're writing in where you kind of need to touch on the Parkerness of him, but still keep it clear that it's not.
You know, the truth is, I don't think about these things when I'm writing. I feel them. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's much more of an intuitive thing. I know Ben like I know my best friend. So to write, I'm not thinking how what would Ben do here. I just know what he would do there. I know who he is. I know his reactions. I know his psychology and his emotions. And I just follow that. You know, I follow the character. I follow Ben, and he tells me how it's going to go and how he's going to react.
Is that why you came back to the character? Is it like revisiting an old friend when you...
It really, really is. I said that to somebody recently. You know, you may have a really dear friend. You don't see them for 5 years, 10 years, sometimes longer than that. And then you see them again, and it's like you pick up exactly where you left off because you know each other so well. And it's like, you know, you were in mid-sentence 10, 15 years ago, and you just pick up in mid-sentence. And that's kind of what it is with these characters. It happened recently with Justice League Unlimited. We did a Justice League Infinity series for DC, and I hadn't written those characters since the early 2000s. But I know those characters, and off we went. It was, oh, here we are with this gang of my old friends. Let's go have fun.
So the character Ben Reilly's Spider-Man takes place in the past of current continuity. I mean, right now, Amazing Spider-Man, he's in that book. But this is definitely pre that.
Yes, this is exactly in that moment where Peter and Mary Jane have left, and he steps into the role as Spider-Man. He's not the Scarlet Spider, he's Spider-Man. Yeah.
So why was that the point in the timeline that you wanted to come back to? Did they come to you and say, do you want to write at this point, or did you decide, hey?
Yeah, they came to me with that idea. You know, they wanted to do a Ben Reilly story from that era, and what we kind of realized was that moment, you know, if you jump in the middle when he's already Spider-Man and already established, it's a whole different thing. At this moment, it's a crisis point. And you always want to be able to write from a crisis point for a character, for it to be interesting. Because as I said just a few minutes ago, he doesn't know. He's not sure who he is. He doesn't have a life. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have the supporting cast that developed later when he was in that era. He's really on his own trying to figure it all out. And that to me is a really interesting point to step into Ben's story.
And I think there's so many perfect character points you have in that book. And I mean, you should be hailed for every moment that you wrote that, because there's so many great stuff.
Oh, thank you.
You're more than welcome. There's a moment where Ben Reilly says or suggests that he finds purpose in life as Spider-Man. And I think the important thing about that sentence, not that he finds purpose in Spider-Man, but that it implies he has no purpose when he's not Spider-Man.
Or at right. least at this moment. At this moment in time, that's exactly how he feels, because he doesn't know. He's living in a dumpy apartment in the East Village. You know, he just got this job at the coffee shop. So he hasn't been, you know, and here is this brilliant guy. And what is he doing? He's sweeping up and, you know, giving people coffee and washing dishes in a coffee shop. And he's got nothing else. But when he puts on that mask and he puts on that costume, he knows he has an impact on the world. He knows he can help make the world a better place as Spider-Man. He knows what's expected of him. Whereas as Ben, he has no clue.
Is living the kind of life that he's living, or, you know, working at a bar or not, is that a choice? Is that sort of, I don't know if you know, I've seen the movie Good Will Hunting, where the genius janitor, the guy,
I saw it years super genius, ago, yeah.
Right, because obviously Ben Reilly, being basically Peter Parker, is an uber genius. He probably could do most types of jobs. Is he intentionally trying to avoid living that kind of life to not be noticed in that way? Or make a wave?
At this point, I think he very much is, because there's a part of him that doesn't even think he deserves something more. You know, he really who still feels like an imposter. You know, we all have those moments in our lives of imposter syndrome. I'm working one day and I'm like, oh, they're finally going to find out after all these years that I have no talent and the stories stink and I'm awful. You know, there's always that sense. And Ben has that. It's just like he doesn't know. He doesn't know what he should do. So he's going to lay low, keep his head down, no friends, just, you know, go do this job, go be Spider-Man. But underneath that is this part of him that's desperate for connection. You know, the story is called The Humanity Agenda, that applies to our antagonist, who we haven't met yet, who's behind this whole thing, and to Ben himself, because they're both, as we'll see, seeking some kind of connection to humanity. As much as Ben is pushing everything and everyone away, he desperately wants that connection.
So at this moment of the story, though, Ben Reilly does believe that he was the true Peter Parker.
Yes. Yes.
So knowing that the Peter Parker that's having the great life with Mary Jane is the false Peter Parker, the clone, you know what I'm saying? Or at least not legitimate. how strong would is the bitterness there that he's saying that this guy took over my life and in many ways is not, I won't say a villain on some level, but is definitely got the person who cheated him out of what should have been his.
Right, right. Well, you know, I think he understands that Peter didn't consciously cheat him out of anything. So he's not, on one level, he's not angry at Peter. He's happy for Peter. But if you go down to level 2 and 3, and we explore this in the course of the story, of course he resents Peter for this. He has to. There's, you know, Peter is like a brother to him at this point. But you can really want to strangle your brother and throw him down a flight of stairs, can't you? So, you know, look at any family, you know? And so I think it's a little bit of that. It's like he absolutely loves Peter and he absolutely resents Peter at the same time.
I mean, does he view Peter as, at least in part, an imposter?
I don't know if he would put it that way. Because the truth is, you know, let's say that for the purposes of this argument, Peter is a clone. He is a replica of Ben. He's not, you know, when you think of an imposter, you think of the chameleon, someone who is very consciously trying to take someone's place and pretend to be them. Peter isn't. Peter is, as far as Peter ever knew, he was Peter Parker. So he wasn't trying to take anything away from anybody. And that makes it even worse for Ben, actually, that Peter is a good guy, because he can't villainize him. He knows he's a good and decent guy, and yet this guy has the beautiful wife. He's got a baby on the way. He's got a good life. And what have I got? And I'm the real guy, and I've got nothing. You know, there's a lot of resentment there for sure. But he has to work through that.
Now, the best villains are the ones that mirror the hero. And I'm thinking that you very intentionally chose the character of Carrion to be the first issue villain. There's a scene with the character Malcolm McBride, which is the alter ego of Carrion, who suggests that he needs Carrion to survive. And I'm wondering, is that mirroring Ben Reilly, who needs Spider-Man to survive? Was that an intentional mirroring of the characters?
You know, was it intentional? I don't know. But one of the things that drives me and interests me is the duality inside all of us. You know, we all have that pull of opposites inside us. You know, that's what makes an interesting human being. That's what makes an interesting character. And certainly Ben has that. There's just the identity question of, am I Ben? Am I not Ben? Am I Peter? Am I Ben? Then there's, am I Ben? Am I Spider-Man? You know, there's that whole tug of war between those two things. And the whole question with any of these characters, which is, if you're continually putting on a mask and becoming something else, who's the real person? Is it the guy in the costume with the mask on? Or is it the guy underneath? And I always say with Spider-Man, in the end, when you're writing a Spider-Man story, you're writing a Peter Parker story with mask on or mask off. Mm-hmm. You look at a character like Batman and you feel like sometimes he gets lost in the role and he loses Bruce Wayne along the way and he becomes this thing and he has to remember and pull back. It's the duality, certainly the duality of Malcolm, that he's got this thing inside him that he hates, and yet we see in the story that he feels that he needs it. I don't want to give away why. You know, we explain why in the story that he actually needs Carrion inside him to help him through a very difficult time. You'll find those things in a lot of my stories as sort of mirrors of duality within the hero and the villain, because we all have it. The hero has a villain inside him to some degree, and the villain has a hero inside him to some degree, as we all do.
And obviously, as you were talking about Ben Reilly, he had multiple masks on. Like you said, he has the Spider-Man mask. I guess, is Ben Reilly then the mask and Peter Parker, or Peter Parker the mask?
Well, Ben Reilly is a mask on some level for him, you know, because he couldn't be Peter anymore. So he came up with this name and this identity and went off and traveled for 5 years and never was able to put down roots. So Ben never really became much of anything out there. He traveled the whole world for 5 years. So Ben is a mask, but he can't really be Peter. So Peter's a mask. Spider-Man's a mask. He's juggling masks at this point. And one of the things he has to become comfortable with being Ben Reilly and put down roots and build a life.
I mean, the character of Ben Reilly is so complex. I mean, it's not surprising that 20 years later, he has had a renaissance of popularity.
Yeah.
It's because he is, in many ways, extremely complex. I mean, in many ways, more complex than Peter Parker, who's in many ways extremely complex.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly. I've said the same thing. I've said the same exact thing.
So, obviously, Ben Reilly's also a major character, dominant character in the current Amazing Spider-Man storyline, as you mentioned. Is the story's continuity connected to what you're doing? I mean, is there connection, relationships between those two stories, or is this its own entity
It's its own entity. Yeah. There's no major. I mean, like, we know that Kafka is involved in the current Spider-Man storyline, and so she's here, and the fact that we're showing the development of that relationship in our story plays into that. But it was beyond that. These stories really exist on their own. You know, obviously it's the same character, so there will be things mirroring each other. But there was no plan to, like, oh, and I'll put this in here and it will pay off over there. Nothing like that happening.
I mean, this is very much an insular story, right? I mean, the world of this storyline exists on its own.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. It is, you know, we say back in the 90s, but obviously in comic book time, it's not the 90s. It's probably four years ago or something, you know?
Right.
We don't really, in my mind, it's like 5 years before, you know? But we can never come out and say that. So one of the challenges was, well, what do we do with technology? You know, like in the 90s, the technology was very different than it was, say, 5 years ago.
Right,
so
right.
We just sort of very gently skirt all that.
You know? So an iPhone's not going to may necessarily pop up in Ben Reilly's Spider-Man or just quietly.
You know, I was talking to my editors, like, well, what about cell phones? What kind of cell phone? You know, that kind of thing is just... So we're just very gentle with that. We don't want to put in anything that's so definitively of a specific time. Mm. But in my head, this story is taking place 5 years, maybe 5 years ago.
Well, I mean, it doesn't seem too different than let's say in DC world, where you have a character like Superman, who we all know fought near World War II in the 1940s. The character was around, but also you're not going to have reference in current Superman to, oh, remember when I smacked a punch out a Nazi back in the day?
Right, exactly.
You know, well, you just gotta assume, you know?
Yeah. And there's a suspension of disbelief that you have to have with any of these stories.
Mm. So what can listeners look forward to in the future of Ben Reilly Spider-Man? Is this going to be an ongoing? Is this a miniseries?
It's a 5-issue miniseries that will take Ben on a very complete journey. You know, starting from where everything will be discussed with a real arc of growth and change. There we see a lot of classic Spider-Man villains, and then we will eventually see the villain behind the villains in a few issues. And I think it will be unexpected. That's all I can say.
Well,
I kind of didn't expect it. So I wrote it.
So are all the issues completed and obviously completed as far as writing goes?
I'm finishing up the last issue this month.
Like I said, it really, the first issue really, I think, was impressive. I mean, there's so many character beats that really were genius. And I think it definitely shows just how great of a writer you are and have been.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And I really appreciate that.
It's definitely my pleasure. And Mr. DeMatteis, it was a pleasure talking with you.
Great to talk to you as well.
I like I said, I enjoyed talking Spider-Man with you, and you are definitely the legend to talk to about Spider-Man.
Well, you take good care and you stay safe and healthy.
And you as well, sir. Have a fantastic day.